艺术毕业，但是那以后的嘛，不说大学四年，我们准备往后来校外一个更多方面的培训呢。但得第一点一样，你去学校不怕，你或者去还把那的结果还给你啊。当然也把结果也把它理解呀，懂不懂？因为在这点我请了应届班去，还把平均性合法。你提供就是接触一些的深度或初步，然后反正看把那能看懂或者看些，努力不往初步度才毕业的上，也阿里也算毕业。第二个讲呢，这里哈当然也这里还有他们，那呢，哎，有个女粉丝留言是你跟忙死我，哎呀，你啥职业的？特别怎么职业？你写的？啊，你写的？啊？まあ、その今あった、例えば、こうにしてみよう、こうにして、ゆっくり、遊べるために、覚えす、いいしし、いいしやし、し、し、やっこっけいし、はい、です。なん、やめち、えりし、たんぼき、うきさ、あお、あ。
Good afternoon. So this morning, we spoke about how to generate the mind of refuge in the context of practitioners of initial capacity.Whereby one has having reflected on the topic just completed, the suffering lower realms, one generates a fear of being born there, recognizing that because of the intensity of suffering in the lower realms, one's mind is so dominated by one's own pain and misery that it is impossible to engage in the Dharma, even if one happens to be physically in the environment where it's available.Not wanting to suffer in this way, not wanting our spiritual growth, and in particular, if we have aspiration to develop bodhicitta and so forth, not wanting our spiritual growth to be impeded, we have a fear for such a rebirth. We then seek guidance or protection from such a potential rebirth, asking ourselves, who has the ability to guide me so that I can gain freedom from such a rebirth?And that is the three jewels. So this is how we looked at the two causes that lead to one sincerely going for refuge, namely fear in this context of impeding our spiritual development and suffering, as well as faith, this mind of wholehearted trust that the three jewels have the capacity to guide us to attain freedom from suffering.
但是我送的他的什么问题我出现一个他把我们的年龄看起我是可是对于是你你在这里是呢来进发是吧根据但是这个老好的我能给他们参照过来谁入席的两边去年龄在我有发送的他也他问我有个话对于他把我们的入席送上也就是我觉得上一一一三一一一七或者是一样的九个其实年龄结果的第一三档都是四当然给我送有个话你一下把钱能理解了让人能接到他把一起和我而接下来做过一旦没给你安心有那一种没关系让你给你做很早的经验这个要什么以上是不算也要上一说说我就一说那想你还有那些以下的话当时先把我先把给你约谁也单在七八七月上今天三级啊，这些书法的呀，书法的呀，你呢？你比现在有说说人流一些，他当然就语言啊，那人就呀，那边人又不了不起，啊，了不起，你看到啊，了不起，哦，是的，书法界，嗯，第四吧，理解了，嗯，把我的语言在现在一起给我介绍到南的前上级学习完，哦，对呀，后世他的另一份的某一些。绝对是不仅其一日三日的好多钱钱得了那些但这里生了一些钱的阿当不是那就是一定给我啥时候给我回来的给我起码一问题二问有的话七八折都得了呀那呢嗯一日是一年大对一日是一年的得到七三日电报大家因为咱们今天一日是一年没说七一年的大人去去去年的我说和我说是一定もなたで、え、しか、じさんの場合もった、ビリギバル。じか、か、ロセント、ゆっくりし、とおき。
having generated the two causes for refuge, fear in particular, fear of suffering, as well as faith, faith in the three jewels, our faith then propels us to the teachings of the Buddha. So what is the method that the Buddha taught? The method by which we can gain freedom from the potential or the possibility of falling into the lower realms? That is the cultivation of virtuous causes through the trainings of ethics, generosity, patience, enthusiastic perseverance, and prayer. So this morning, we spoke about this meditation, whereby one engages in meditating, cultivating all of these causes. And again, it's our mind of faith in the three jewels that turns us to the teachings and gives us the strength of mind, the determination to put aside what is not important and to embrace these teachings, embrace what is important. So the meditation on ethical restraint is, in brief, the commitment not to bring harm to others, to not to harm others through my physical behavior and through my speech. And to the extent I can restrain my mind from the afflictions, I commit to not bringing harm to myself or others through my own afflictions. So this is the brief meditation on ethics. Generosity is a mind of wanting to benefit others. So ethics is the determination not to add to the harm and suffering in this world, to ourselves and others. Generosity is the wish to give of ourselves, to help others, to ease the suffering of others, whether it's sharing our material resources, sharing our time, our friendship, our skills and talents, wanting to give of ourselves to benefit others. And the third is the meditation on patience, with the recognition that transforming our mind, engaging with others, does bring about hardship. So when hardship is experienced from others, we reflect that I will not respond in kind, but rather with kindness. And likewise, where the hardship is experienced from our own way of thinking, to show kindness to ourselves, to not be overwhelmed by our afflictions. And the fourth reflection was that of enthusiastic perseverance, where we generate intentionally generate a mind of joy in what we are doing, in that we are now accumulating the causes that will lead to ongoing excellent rebirths, accumulating the causes that will be strengthening our connection to the Dharma. We are accumulating the causes that will eventually flourish in our own complete liberation from suffering, our attainment of Buddhahood. So we intentionally generate a mind of joy, a mind that delights in virtue, as this strengthens our connection with and our commitment to the virtuous Dharma. And finally, we end with prayer, that from life to life may we continue to meet fully qualified spiritual guides, and may I meet them at a young age, may I recognize them as such, and open myself to their guidance and enthusiastically engage in accomplishing their guidance. So this meditation that we looked at this morning, this should be our main training, our main focus. It is the very foundation upon which all other good qualities will be attained. So just talk briefly then about this term meditation. Meditation can be best understood through its synonyms of habituation or familiarization. What we are trying to do is become ever more habituated to wholesome ways of thinking and break our habituation to unwholesome ways of thinking. So there's two types of meditation. We could maybe express it like this, or two types of techniques to develop habituation. One is formal, whether it's sitting quietly here or at home, reflecting in the way that's just been presented. That's the one type where one is free of distraction and therefore can, with a more concentrated mind and for a larger period of time, one can reflect on in the way that has just been described. And one can do that at a time that suits your lifestyle, whether it's in the morning or whether it's in the evening or in the afternoon. But here, to develop habits, it should be understood that this takes repeated effort over a sustained period. Occasional meditation, not having a sustained practice, won't bring about much change. But if you do so every day, change will come. But furthermore, if one only relies on formal meditation, change will come very slowly. So the second way to habituate your mind is, in addition to formal meditation, would be informal meditation. So this is during quiet periods in your day. And it can be when you're driving somewhere, when you're boiling the kettle, whatever it may be, when you're not needing to engage in thinking about something, think about what you're meditating on. So if one's driving one's car, it's a route you've done many times, you can very easily remind yourself of your commitment. I will not bring harm to anyone. I'm perhaps about to meet people. I'll ensure I engage with them with kindness and care because they matter. And even if they get a bit annoyed or frustrated with me or other drivers on the road drive a bit badly, they matter. I will not get annoyed with them. I will rather hold them with care. So in this way, whilst one is doing one's daily activities, take those moments and remind yourself of what you're meditating on. This combined with formal practice will bring about a strengthening of habituation to wholesome ways of thinking and breaking our habituation to unwholesome ways of thinking.
So
the start of the chapter, it was mentioned that here in this chapter on refuge, we are looking at the means for achieving happiness in future lives. And this chapter of refuge is presented with four major outlines. Now we come to the third. We've looked at the first, the causes for going for refuge, which are in brief are fear and faith. Then we've just completed the second, which is the objects to which one goes for refuge. And now we come to the third of the four major outlines, the way in which one goes for refuge. So in the handout, we near the top of page 118, and in the published book in the middle of page 101, the way in which you go for refuge. And this then has four sub-outlines. Going for refuge by understanding their excellent qualities, the excellent qualities of the individual three jewels, by way of understanding their distinctions, their individual characteristics. Thirdly, by way of commitment. And fourthly, by way of not advocating other ones. So the first or the first points, going for refuge by way of understanding their excellent qualities, as we see now in the next paragraph, this has its own divisions. Since this requires recollecting excellent qualities of the objects of refuge, this has three points: the excellent qualities of the Buddha, the excellent qualities of the Dharma, and the excellent qualities of the Sangha. And now the first of those four, the excellent qualities of the Buddha. Now at the bottom of the page, or the next outline, we see that has also four points: the excellent qualities of the Buddha's body, speech, mind, and exalted activities, or more commonly translated as enlightened activities. So now, looking at in more detail at the first, the excellent qualities of the Buddha's body. So there it starts with saying, recollecting the signs and marks of a Buddha. So the signs are the 32 signs of the on the Buddha's body, and there are 80 minor signs or marks. And these are all results of excellent qualities the Buddha has attained that are then displayed by means of their physical body. The Lama Tsongkhapa quotes from a text Praise in Analogies, where analogies are used to describe the excellent qualities of the Buddha's body. So looking at the first verse, your body is adorned with the signs, so beautiful, nectar for the eyes, like a cloudless sky in autumn, ornamented with clusters of stars. Look in the first two lines. Your body is adorned with the signs. So the signs here, explicitly, the 32 signs that are referred to above, but it implies the 80 marks as well. So your body is adorned with these signs, these karmic results of the excellent qualities a Buddha has attained. So merely seeing them is now the second line, so beautiful, nectar for the eyes. So beautiful, it's like nectar for the person with a great fortune to observe the body of a Buddha. So nectar is usually something that we would, a substance we would drink. But here in the poetry, it's used as a metaphor for merely seeing the Buddha is like consuming nectar.
Yari goes, 여기 그 카라리와 작은 문제도 차고 자자 인과화도 자자 여기 값이야 카라치야 뭐 그다음 이제 막 대위 유진년이나 취취배인이나 말라서 대위 예표서 남치배라고 말한데 채널이야 그래서 나 진 진을 빌리 앱에 내가 말해서 지나고 딱 까마디 수준 下去 아, 大把子就是从前的老板那样，我去财务休息，也不休息就通过瓦解。第三，订阅的就那订阅进单，下午一对一对一，才能够感觉良好一下。啊，你刚才说刚一件账也值得干的，差不多，刚一。你说才能够不在这，刚开门要不你就没错分了，现在外出来要买房，现在你带着错些钱啊，难怪说话。
当我一天，这是的，很多平常些个事情，上级不是，因他们就故意跟他们就打招呼。反正你是个，从从来，这些事儿啊，我也是。你看你第一见面那个，也比跟你表妹吃那碗鸡鱼的味道，那是大妈煮的，大米粥，难怪了，大妈刚他们端了饭去，吃到后头去下锅，可是我今年一些的，上级不留给了这人，太热气。
The third and fourth line, like a cloudless sky in autumn, ornamented with clusters of stars. This term, in this context, the season of autumn is often mentioned, and it's for a specific purpose. If you think back to ancient India, but the area we live in here is also quite suitable in that during summer, the sky, the night sky may not be that clear because there's a lot of dust around. It's very dry and the sky can be obscured by dust. Or in winter, the sky may be quite moist and there may be a mist around. But in the autumn, the dust of the summer has settled. The thick clouds of the winter are yet to come. So the night sky can be bright and vibrant. And that vibrancy comes from the clarity with which one sees the stars in the night sky. So this is the reason why autumn is often mentioned in the context of the clarity of the night sky. And this is being used here as a metaphor for when one sees the body of a Buddha. It's by seeing the body of a Buddha as being likened to seeing a clear sky, a night sky in autumn, which brings a joy to the mind when one sees this flawless beauty of the cosmic universe. Likewise, when seeing the body of a Buddha, great joy arises in the mind through seeing the stainless beauty of a Buddha. In the second verse, O sage endowed with the color of gold, so beautiful, dressed in monastic robes, like a golden mountaintop wrapped in clouds at dusk or dawn. Looking at the first two lines, O sage, endowed with the color of gold, so beautiful, dressed in monastic robes. The body of the Buddha is golden in color, golden in the sense of being radiant and having a radiant and rich luster. So when whoever sees such a body, then also beautified by being dressed in monastic robes, joy arises in the mind of whomever has the great fortune of seeing the body of a Buddha.
那边是，这我这么的第一，三年第一，第八章，是让我们这三年的我是能那个去，去那个对吧？三年嘛，是谁？有
The third and fourth line, like a golden mountaintop wrapped in clouds at dusk or dawn. Here one, the metaphor again brings images of a natural beauty to mind. We think of a beautiful mountain, it either the light of dawn or the light of dusk, perhaps enshrouded in some mist or light cloud. And this is a natural wonder, something that whenever one sees a sunrise or a sunset over mountains, it's something quite beautiful. Whether there are light clouds or mist or not, the change in light makes it something magnificent to observe. So this is the majesty of the body of the Buddha is being likened to the majesty of our natural world. So one can relate to these verses in a way that touches you, because that's the purpose of them. And so one can think of a sunrise or a sunset. One can think of light cloud or mist or a cloudless sky. One could see a sun rise or set behind a mountain is majestic. And in the same way, seeing the body of a Buddha is majestic. Then the third verse, Protector, the sphere of your face's splendor, although unadorned by jewelry, is beyond that of the full moon in a vast and cloudless sky. So looking at the first two lines together, so the translation's fine. I'll just change the word order so it just matches the explanation, but the translation's fine. Protector, although unadorned by jewelry, the sphere of your face is splendor. So protector, it's not the same word for refuge, but it's a word for protector. And so this is a polite way to address the Buddha, who is the protector of suffering beings. That unlike ordinary people in society, the Buddha does not need to wear any jewelry to beautify themselves. Even without any jewelry, with a necklace or earrings, the sphere of the face is still splendid. In other words, the beauty of the Buddha is radiant, without needing to be adorned by jewelry.
Yeah,
The analogy is then presented in the third and fourth line, is beyond the face of the Buddha, is beyond that of the full moon in a vast and cloudless sky. So again, relying on the natural beauty of our natural world, one can think of a night sky illuminated by a full moon. This is something we find magnificent. When we notice it, we look up and we're captivated by the beauty of a full moon illuminating a dark night sky. And also, a full moon illuminates the sky throughout the night, not just for a brief moment like a flash of lightning, but throughout the night. But the beauty of the face of the Buddha is even beyond that. And this then is the third and fourth line, beyond that of the full moon in a vast and cloudless sky.
而且这些边嘛，边上的你也开心嘛，无论你从哪边嘛，你却从江南八十九个。Then
the fourth verse, if the lotus of your mouth and a lotus in bloom in the sun are beheld by a bee, the bee will have its doubts about the lotus.
啊，这里给他上一些面些，就一些别嘛子，他上一些的别嘛子，别嘛子，别嘛子，别嘛子。在别嘛是，那边别嘛音乐开起不起，啊，那没得别嘛音，反正把没下来就一起来看起，开始，加上音乐下来对嘛的开起吧，俺们上一些的别嘛开起吧，俺们这些有意思，无论从哪。
边嘛呢，其实这么讲的啊，就是的。其实他读完是本五种全部的一部，每条都会有的，每条都啊没，都是这样一个白呀。三级一学习边嘛的，但每条边嘛音乐开起来，你，从我们这边我们这，我一边嘛，这里个，三级一学习边嘛对呀，这一节，每条边每一节本都不一样的，其实没嘛这就搞不着，把学的搞不着，啊，你那是啊那。
咱们去，咱商业学院那里那都不管，就包括嘛，现在那不管的就看遇到别么开窍的，轻松的嘛，能上遇到我爸去拍，不轻会，过年调来也都是结果的。一年是当然就商业学院，别么给，没到别么跟音乐开窍的，再老一个咱们去，咱们不就，挨到不管的，也得搞完，俺商业学院的，这样的搞不了，俺们这，这，这干，也。
Looking at the entire verse, so the mouth of the Buddha is being likened to a beautiful lotus. So if we think of an insect such as a bee, an insect that is drawn to a flower's nectar will be drawn to both the beauty of a lotus in bloom as well as to the beauty of the Buddha's face, not being able to distinguish the two in that they are both seen as beautiful. So for the insect, both the mouth of the Buddha and the blooming lotus are attractive and draw the bee in. So this is the meaning of this verse. So in the same way that the beauty of the natural world and the beauty of a Buddha is hard to distinguish, in the same way that we take great joy in the beauty of the natural world, so too by seeing the body of a Buddha. The fifth verse, Your face endowed with the color of gold is beautified further with your pure white teeth, like immaculate autumn moonbeams, filtering between golden mountains.
So
looking at the fifth verse altogether again, your face endowed with the color of gold, so this has been this gold rich luster of it's not necessarily literally gold, but the light gold has a rich luster to it, so too does the color of the Buddha. And his face is further beautified with his pure white teeth. So here, pure in the sense of straight and free of fillings or cracks. So in this sense, the Buddha's teeth are pure. And in the analogy, like immaculate autumn moonbeams filtering between golden mountains. So again, our journey through these majestic mountains and the majestic natural world continues. And it's again, the Buddha has been likened to what is most beautiful in our world. And all the beauty of the Buddha has come about independence on these perfected, this incredible karmic causes that he has created over lifetimes. In the sixth verse, so I'm just going to change the last two lines. Venerable One, your right hand embellished with the mark of the wheel makes a gesture of relief to people terrified by samsara. So I'll read it again. Venerable One, your right hand embellished with the mark of the wheel makes the gesture of relief to people terrified by samsara. So the right hand of the Buddha in this verse referred to as the Venerable One is marked with a Dharma wheel. And this gesture, showing it, is a gesture of giving relief. So this, the word that is translated here as giving breath, this is a literal translation, but the meaning is giving relief to those who are terrified by samsara, those who have recognized that they are in pain. And that as long as one is in samsara, one will suffer. By understanding the meaning of this gesture, relief from this terror comes, because one knows, under the guidance of the Buddha, one will gain freedom from cyclic existence. So the final verse, and again I'll change the fourth line. O sage, as you walk, your feet leave designs on the earth like resplendent lotuses. How could it be made lovelier by lotus gardens? So I'll just read it again. O sage, as you walk, your feet leave designs on the earth like resplendent lotuses. How could it be made lovelier by lotus gardens? The first two lines, O sage, as you walk, your feet leave designs on the earth. So this refers to not mere footprints that we make when we walk in soft earth, but the feet of the Buddha have, on the underside of the feet of the Buddha, the soles of the feet of the Buddha, are Dharma wheels. So these leave an imprint on the earth as the Buddha walks. In the third and fourth lines, so in the third line, like resplendent lotuses, so the beauty of these signs that are, or these marks that are left in the earth are likened to the beauty of lotus flowers. So there is no need, now the fourth line, there is no need for the ground through which the Buddha has walked to be beautified by even a garden of lotuses when it is beautified by his footprints, with these particular marks that his footprints leave. So this then is the meaning then of the fourth line. How could it be made lovelier by lotus gardens? So there is no need for there to be lotuses where the Buddha walks, or other kinds of flowers of beauty, because his footprints leave such outstanding marks. So here, this verse, like with the others, leads us to recall these incredible marks and signs on the Buddha's body that make his body stand out from other beings. And these have all come from the incredible causes that he has created. So this should lead to a rejoicing in what the Buddha has achieved, as well as that we have met such a being, that we've met the teachings of such a being. So that the outset of this subdivision was mentioned that there are 30 signs and 80 marks, 32 signs and 80 marks. So these all come from their own respective karmic causes. And there are many that one can go through, but Lama Tsongkhapa has only quoted 7 verses, so it's just a brief summary and not even going into detail as to the karmic causes of them. But there are many more, such as the particular hair of a Buddha, this deep dark blue black in tight curls, curling in, I think it's an anti-clockwise manner. And each individual curl, if one were to pull out the hair or lengthen out the hair, would be of a considerable length. So the body of the Buddha is something quite remarkable because of the causes that were created leading to such a body. And the further mark is the, I don't know what it's called, but there's a cluster of hair between the eyes of the Buddha. And this too is a curl of hair that if one were to pull it, would be extremely long. And it's a tight curl, hence it's round. So as we see on our Buddha statue, that is a correct representation. Some modern artists have drawn a, I don't know what English word we use, anyway, a nadar. So this sign that is used in Tantra, and it looks more like a letter between the eyes of the Buddha. This is mistaken. It's the actual mark that is there on a Buddha is this circular curl of hair. That's where our statue is correctly presented. And a further mark is the fingers of a Buddha are not like ours. They are long and they are webbed. In fact, quite like that of a water bird. So this too is a unique feature of a Buddha's body. And similarly, as the, is mentioned here, the palms and the soles of the feet of the Buddha are also marked by Dharma
wheels.
This is just a brief presentation of the 32 marks and 80 signs of a Buddha's body. So the purpose of this recollection is for us to be reminded of just how unique a being a Buddha is. So the visual presentation of the Buddha's body has some similarity with the general form of a human, but is yet quite different. And this is because of the incredible amount of virtue and the wide variety in virtuous causes that a being is required to accumulate in order to eventually arise as a Buddha. So by reminding ourselves of this difference in a Buddha's physical body from that of a regular human being, we are reminded of the incredible karmic causes the Buddha accumulated over an immense period of time in order to be of benefit to ourselves and others. And for example, the curl of hair between the eyes of the Buddha, there are specific causes required for that result, and those causes too are immense. So whilst there's a vast difference between a bodhisattva on the 10th ground and a Buddha, because a bodhisattva on the 10th ground is so close to attaining Buddhahood, their body is starting to resemble that of a Buddha, just starting to show some of these marks and signs. The body of the Buddha, or the Rupakaya, has two types, that of the Nimanakaya, or the Nimanakaya and Simbokakaya. So these two types of body, what is being described here is the Nimanakaya. So the Nimanakaya, or emanation body, there are differing types. So the type that is being described here is the supreme Nimanakaya, or the supreme emanation body. That is the body that the Buddha Shakyamuni displayed. Another kind of Nimanakaya, maybe it's called a birth Nimanakaya. This is the one that when the Buddhas appear in a way that looks like an ordinary human being, whilst it is still a body of a Buddha, an emanation body, a Nimanakaya, it does not have the 32 marks and 80 signs. So what is described here is the supreme Nimanakaya, and the enjoyment body, or the Simbokakaya, that too is quite different from what is described here. That then is a brief presentation on the excellent qualities of the Buddha's body. Now to come to the excellent qualities of the Buddha's speech. Lama Tsongkhapa writes, contemplate the marvelous way in which, when many people ask different questions at the same time, the Buddha apprehends them in a single moment of intelligent awareness and answers them all with one utterance, which they understand in their respective languages.
And
Didn't under the teacher Chatsang, Selson as a Chatsang. From what Lama Tsongkhapa writes here, again we can see just from these few lines how very different a Buddha is from us. So we know when we're engaging with others, if let's say it's a group and more than one person is asking a question at the same time, we struggle to be able to hear both. We struggle to be able to understand both together, and therefore we can't answer. So we know that this is a bit frustrating, and then we'll say to them, please, one at a time. A Buddha doesn't have that impediment because, as we was looked at this morning, a Buddha has completely abandoned all obscurations, obscurations to liberation, obscurations to omniscience. Therefore, their omniscient consciousness, or their consciousness is omniscient in that it is not impeded by any trace of fault. Therefore, any number of people can ask questions at the same moment to a Buddha. The Buddha will hear and understand all their questions flawlessly, and in the same moment will be able to respond or reply to each of them. So here too we see the vast difference between an enlightened being and an ordinary being. So just reading again, contemplate the marvelous way in which, when many people ask different questions at the same time, the Buddha apprehends them in a single moment of intelligent awareness and answers them all with one utterance, which they understand in their respective languages. Likewise, as just mentioned, not only can we not understand multiple people asking questions at the same time, we cannot answer all of them at the same time. Buddha doesn't have that impediment because their mind is unobscured. They've removed all trace of fault. So they can give a single answer answering all beings. Their single answer may be just a single word. And in this way, they will be able to help beings in a limitless manner. This is again clear in Lama Tsongkhapa's writings here, that when the Buddha replies, he can reply in a single moment and with a single utterance. So it can be a statement, it can be a sentence, it can be a single word, and a being's will understand it in their own respective languages. This all comes about because of the Buddha's unobscured consciousness. So for us in English, this is not the last, but in the Tibetans at the beginning, contemplate a marvelous manner. So hearing how a Buddha can understand and communicate in this remarkable way, it truly is something that can be called marvelous.
And 소양 지리 소설 된 매야 대 예다 외나 젠바 지게나 상대의 자양 송도 캠벅스 네 디니 라미 두마 타시비 쉐이게 콜로덕 꼴세가 지수비 주의 세바오스.
Then Lama Tsongkhapa quotes from the Satyaka chapter. Thus, if all beings simultaneously ask many questions in their specific languages, his mind comprehends them in a single moment and answers them all with one melodious statement. In this way, he who guides the world knowingly teaches with his melodious voice. He completely turns the wheel of Dharma that puts an end to the suffering of gods and men. Reflect along the lines of these verses. What we see here is, as Lama Tsongkhapa does throughout his Lamrim, is he presents the Dharma, but he presents the sources so one knows that what he's writing is valid and reliable, and therefore one can take it to heart. So the first two lines, thus if all beings simultaneously ask many questions in their specific languages, so this he presented above already, so that the Buddha can hear and understand others, a vast number of different languages and questions at the same time. And the verse continues, his mind comprehends them in a single moment and answers them all with one melodious statement. So this is above. So he can understand and he can hear and understand and reply without any impediments because his consciousness is unimpeded by any obscuration. The next verse. In this way, he guides the world knowingly, teaches with his melodious voice. So, in this way, he who guides the world knowingly teaches with his melodious voice. He completely turns the wheel of Dharma and puts an end to the suffering of gods and men. The first two lines are talking about the many qualities of the Buddha's voice and the beauty of his voice, the enchantment with which people would hear the teachings of a Buddha. And the turning of the wheel of Dharma is teaching the Dharma specific to the needs of beings before him. And he puts an end to the suffering of gods and men. So those who have created the causes to have a precious human rebirth or being born in one of the specific God realms where one can engage in the Dharma. Such people, you have created the causes to meet the Buddha's teachings, will be guided swiftly to attain liberation and even enlightenment. In this, a brief summation of the Buddha's qualities of speech, we see the vast difference between how a Buddha can guide others and how us ordinary people can guide. So Buddha, as we see here, can hear and understand a variety of questions in a variety of languages in the same moment and can respond to them perfectly in accordance with each person's own individual karmic background and predisposition. We know we cannot do that. Moreover, as we heard previously, the Buddha has the qualities that come that mean that the advice is specific to that individual and it's ideally suited to the individual, to each individual asking questions. So for us, when we are trying to guide and help others, we are not like this. We have to hear each question individually. It needs to be in the language that we can understand. And we answer as best we can. But we cannot necessarily give a faultless answer because our continuum is still obscured by afflictions, as well as their imprints and certainly their stains. This is why we are so limited, whereas a Buddha, as a perfected being, can guide beings perfectly. So the Buddha is not limited by only being able to speak a few languages. He can reply to humans in their own specific language. When interacting with gods, he can talk to them in their specific languages. Sorry. And when talking to beings in animal realms, such as nagas, he can talk to them in their specific languages. And furthermore, a Buddha is not restricted to communicate and teach with others solely through speech, but can also do so through their body. So, for example, when His Holiness is teaching, you may see him rubbing the top of his head like this. So this will be interpreted in differing ways by his students. Some will see it as his Holiness just rubbing his bald head. Others will see it in a similar way, but understand that he's showing his age, that his time in our world is precious. And others will take it as a reminder of the signs of suffering of old age. So the fourfold suffering of birth, aging, sickness, and death. They will take it in this way. Others will take the same action and interpret it as impermanence. Again, this life is impermanent. This opportunity is coming to an end. It needs to be embraced. Whatever remains needs to be embraced and utilized well. Others will take it to mean as a sign of dependence arising, of how independence on certain causes, certain results arise. And those results then will fade and become causes for their own respective results. And others will use an understanding of dependence arising to lead them to an understanding of selflessness or emptiness. So these independence on one's own education, reflection, and faith in a being such as His Holiness will lead one to have a differing understanding from a single physical gesture, such as rubbing his head. There's a prayer commonly made by beings that when they become bodhisattvas and arhats and buddhas, that they may be able to help others even without speech, so that they can turn the wheel of dharma merely through a physical gesture. And this is how Buddhas, bodhisattvas, and arhats can and do benefit beings. So prayer is expressed that may one, when one becomes a bodhisattva or an arhat or a Buddha, may one be able to benefit beings through mere gesture.
Mm. 미다 지 제미다 하시나 얘네기 대바 지에 들어가요 에세시다 근데 얘네네 아비리리 셰프고나기야 안시리 비가 코젠스 지워지 제니시바 안시 연결하게 그들한 신인라바 와치는 몇번이 수디 시베 지자 산이 디유량하샤 양마시 지혜야시 인시리 비기고 토운 거 지혜디 젠스 지워치고 비교의 산이 지이다 위위배
The way the Buddha then can benefit others is whilst through speech is most clear. I've just given an illustration of how the Buddha can benefit others through physical gesture. But the Buddha can also benefit others through acting through the material world, such as, for example, when someone's reflecting on impermanence and they're keeping their meditation topic of impermanence as their primary meditation topic, informal meditation, as well as in the way I was describing this morning, as they go about their daily activity. They keep reminding themselves of impermanence in order to come to a realization of impermanence. So for such a person, the Buddha can aid their reflections by, at the right moment, causing for example, a tree to sway, whether there's a breeze or not, and thereby helping to remind the person of impermanence, the topic of their meditation. In another way, that's helping through the material world. And another way is to help beings through living beings, not the material world, but through living beings. So through the blessings of the Buddha, the conversation between Chenrezig and Shariputra, which was recorded as we know it in the Heart Sutra, that conversation that came about through the blessings of the Buddha, although the Buddha wasn't directly involved in the conversation, through the blessings of the Buddha, that conversation between Shariputra and Chenrezig has brought such benefits to countless beings. So therefore, the Buddha can benefit through his speech, through his physical behavior, the material world, and through other sentient beings.
Nin kyoran shi shi de na mesa de kyoran chu sun chi de shi sun su ma de 그럼 킬렌지 두그레베 이 킬렌다 니겨라 집시니 이게 개발을 하십시 매드라 지도상에게 가서 왔음 어지유래 그런 메시지 한 박시시
매 재미 거슬게
야섬주 가슴나 변에 취소 월가 하는 군어요 말이야 내대선 상에게 시련스 이런 킬렌다 딱 길에서나 자선 잡고 지자기 말씀을 때 다리 갈수 없는 이 뚝들이 말씀 와대 거의 받아 뚝에 골 그거 되려다 수마 에시 에다다 소야제마도 죽어라서도 그걸 아파대 암브라네 체크 어디 길이 나머 최소 앞에서 그다 유익이 신시도 뚝을 주위에 죽어를 버텨서 치코를 내려다
안 그랬대요
어디 해 에다 사이에 우리 뚝내 최소 뭐 내가 또 왔다 때리기 이집이 신 소모 위반의 지어
저 제가 쿵가와의 렉처께 독한 양캐 등기면도
세월
the attendant to the Buddha not Madhyana the other one a sangha that's what I was Ananda thank you Longtu thank you I had a sangha I had a tisha but that's Ananda thank you. The Buddha's attendant, Ananda, agreed to be the attendant to the Buddha on one condition, which is that whenever the Buddha taught, then Ananda would be at his side. In other words, so that Ananda could hear every possible teaching, he agreed to be the Buddha's attendant on condition that whenever the Buddha taught, Ananda would have to necessarily be there. So there was a period when the Buddha went up to the heaven of the 33, where his mother was, to teach his mother and the gods there. So whilst the Buddha then was in this god realm, the Buddha was not teaching in this world, and because of the promise that he had made to Ananda. But there was still a need for teachings in this world. So what the Buddha did was he didn't teach from his mouth, but he taught from the Ushnisha. On the crown of the Buddha's head, the Buddha taught from the Ushnisha to beings in the God realm, because Ananda did not accompany the Buddha to the God realm, but the Buddha was teaching the Dharma there. So the way he taught was not from his mouth, but from this apparition on the crown of his head. And the reason that we know this is it's through, I guess it's the Tantra, of the umbrella deity, the white umbrella deity. This story is accounted there. So this is, then shows how a perfected being, a Buddha, is able to benefit beings through his body. So even through the crown protrusion, the Ushnisha, he is able to teach. And the great benefits of the Buddha making this promise to Ananda that the Buddha would only teach in the presence of Ananda is because Ananda had this remarkable siddhi or quality of memory. So therefore, every teaching the Buddha gave, Ananda was next to him and was able to faultlessly recall that teaching, to remember that teaching. And thereafter, or then later, when the Buddha no longer abided in this world, Ananda was able to recite from memory all the teachings of the Buddha. And this was how the teachings of the Buddha were initially preserved, because they were not initially written down. And when others had also faultlessly remembered particular teachings, they were able to recall, compare their recollection to that of Ananda's and make sure that their recollection of the Buddha's teachings was faultless. And in this way, the Buddha's teachings abided in our world until much later they were written down. Conclude then with a further story from Ananda. So after Buddha Shakyamuni passed away, then there was a grouping of the arhats gathered together. They formed a community, wanting to form a community of 500 arhats, but there were only 499. So they turned to Ananda and said, "You've been at the side of the Buddha throughout these many years of teachings, and yet you have not become an arhat. That is shameful. How could this be? Go away. Go away and sort yourself out." So Ananda was thrown out of the community, and he went alone into the forest. His mind wasn't despondent, but he did question himself, you know, after all these decades of attending the Buddha, of all this virtue that's being created, all these teachings he's heard and received, he was not yet an arhat. And whilst there are so many others who had become arhats, so he went away with determination, not with the despondence, but a determination. Shortly thereafter, he became an arhat and rejoined the community. And the community welcomed in. The community of fellow arhats welcomed him in. And they piled their yellow robes up together as a sign of respect. And Ananda climbed on top of their yellow robes. And then they started this process of codifying recognizing the teachings of the Buddha. In that Ananda, with his faultless memory, was able to recite all the teachings of the Buddha, so the entire Kangyu.
Yeah,
산이 구유대래 산이 인시 대회계 규칙계 그러다 숨어.
So just to very briefly conclude, so the purpose of looking at the excellent qualities of the Buddha, and we look briefly at those of his body and speech, and next time we'll come to look at the qualities of his mind. The purpose of this is by understanding just how remarkable a Buddha is, one will give rise to deep trust or faith in the Buddha. And having faith in the Buddha, one will have faith in his teachings, the Dharma Jewel, as well as his highly accomplished followers, the Sangha Jewel. So this is the purpose of this topic. And the way to meditate on it, I won't go through it now, but it was as mentioned at the end of this morning's teaching. So I encourage you to do this meditation, generate refuge, meditate on the causes that are the foundation of one's spiritual training. Do this meditation every day. Keep it in mind, not just in meditation, between meditation sessions in the way that are described, in particular that of ethics. Okay, then thank you. Then we'll conclude there for this week. Thank you.